Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Hey, Seth. Doing all right.
Good.
Good to see you.
It's great to see you, too. As always, I'm always excited to see you.
Too bad everyone can't see us. We look great.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was about me. My hair's like... We were just talking before we started recording about how my hair is very tall right now for some reason.
I've listened to podcasts for a long time, and there are times where I have listened to someone's voice for a while, but don't know what they look like. And a lot of times when I actually see them or see a video of them recording the podcast, it breaks my brain. So I'm wondering if anyone who listens regularly hasn't seen us, in which case we'd be very confusing now. We're probably confusing to everybody. We should probably move on.
Probably. Well, let's move on with our what would you do in this particular situation. Would you want to go down with a ship like captains are supposed to, or would you want to be on that last lifeboat watching the ship sink?
So I'm the captain now?
Yeah.
Is what you're saying?
Kirk.
Okay. Kirk? Kirk didn't have this kind of ship.
No, he did not.
If there's space on the lifeboat, I'm going to take it. I think that's my answer.
But if there isn't space, you wouldn't...
No, I wouldn't force someone I would be like, that's my responsibility as the captain. But if there's space, then you go.
Okay.
I can't imagine that boats actually have enough lifeboat space for everybody, though.
I think they do.
That feels like someone would think, do we really need this many? I mean, nothing bad is going to happen. It feels like someone in a boardroom made that call.
See, I think they...
That turned out really badly.
I think they do now because someone in the past did make that call. And then, the Titanic happened. And then maybe...
So you're saying you think they do now as in the last more than a century?
Yes.
Okay.
I think post-Titanic.
Okay, fair.
At least post-Titanic movie.
Oh, okay.
At the least.
What about you? Are you forcing someone off the lifeboat?
I don't know. I feel like I might want to go down with it. Because I'd be like, this is my doing. This whole mess is me. I should just succumb to the waves.
It just sounds horrifying.
It does.
Either way.
You know, I feel like I'd want to go down with it. And then when that last lifeboat was leaving, I'd be like, do I fit on there? I'm hopping on. Well, I would want to go down with the ship, but I'd probably be hopping on the last one if there was room. So I'm probably with you.
Let's go. Let's go fight. Let's go get our captain's license and put this theoretical situation to the test.
Let's do it. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about the readings for the fourth Sunday of Easter, or the third Sunday after Easter, which is very confusing. The first reading is from Acts. This one seems pretty simple. Peter has just healed a man, and the Jewish authorities are angry with him. This one seems at least a little bit separate from the other three, because this Sunday is classically called Good Shepherd Sunday. Mm. So for our psalm, we get the classic Psalm 23 with all its shepherd imagery. Then in the New Testament reading, we get a passage from 1 John in which the author talks about laying down one's life. And then, of course, in the gospel reading, we get the story of the Good Shepherd. And this Sunday has had the Good Shepherd reading as its gospel lesson for at least 1,000 years. So I was thinking, I have some different questions. But one of the ones is, what do we make of this hired hand? In the story of the Good Shepherd, Jesus will say that he's the good shepherd, and unlike this hired hand, he's not going to desert the sheep right when danger comes, when the wolves come. I'd be interested to hear your take on this, because I'm tempted to think of it like, oh, this is one of those things that like is historical. Like what the gospel writer is saying is like, hey, you know, there are people now who are not sticking around when the going gets tough. And then the other part of me is like, well, you know, maybe it has, like, maybe I should try and apply it at least like a little bit today. Like, what does it look like when people don't stick around in church leadership roles, like when the going sort of gets tough? So all that to say, I'd be interested to hear whether you think we should try and do anything with that little tidbit, or if it's more important to think like about the good shepherd and his character than these hired hands.
Well, I guess based on how you frame the question, I'm pressed to answer what makes Jesus stick around. You know, not I mean, it's important to ask the flip side, as you did too, of why are these others prone to leave?
Yeah.
But I feel like the situations that would make a hired hand leave with a shepherd are ones that would also be dangerous to them too, right? So what is it that makes Jesus stay? You know, okay, we think of all these times.
Really good question.
We think about how so many times you see the on a TV show, or even if maybe you've experienced it in real life, where someone just like walks off the job in the moment, like, I've had enough. I feel like the situations facing a shepherd who, based on my understanding, aren't the wealthiest, in matter of fact, are probably working for some of the wealthiest people who own these sheep, can't imagine their benefits are all that good. And the things that they might encounter out in the wilderness, out in the dark, especially at night, might be things worth walking off the job for. And Jesus doesn't do that. I don't have an answer to that question, but that's actually where my mind went, was thinking about what prompts Jesus to stay in a situation that is hard and dangerous.
I think that's a great question. It helps me think about what, like, some of the other questions that I had in mind, which, like, one of them was, like, what job is sort of most similar to a shepherd now? Like, I don't think I've ever seen a shepherd, to be honest. Like, I've seen people farm who have sheep, but there's no shepherd, like, watching them all the time, right? They have them in a pen, places that are usually pretty safe. So, like, the two jobs that came to mind that I thought were like similar in their character were a nurse or like a park ranger. And I was thinking of a nurse as someone who takes care of a patient's well-being and who might feed someone when they're like doing especially poorly. And again, unlike the hired hand, who can't just flee when it's really risky or difficult. And then with the park ranger, I was thinking about someone who protects the natural world and might monitor its health and like looks around for threats, just like a shepherd might do. But even those jobs, like, they seem different to me because they're just that. They're like, they're jobs. It's like, well, the nurse is there, A, because I do think that nurses care. And I think that park rangers do too, but that's part of the job and they get a paycheck for it. But it seems different with the good shepherd. Like, he doesn't seem like he's there for the paycheck. Maybe in the hired hand seems like he is, or she. I think historically probably he, but you know, maybe not.
Well, I don't even know if paycheck is
really
part of the picture, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's some kind of like, you know, remuneration. Shepherds, you probably got food, and I was going to say like housing, but you probably got like a coat so you could sleep with the sheep. You probably got nothing.
Yeah, it's conversations like these that remind me how removed we are from this context too, because I think the one-to-one comparison you're trying to make is really difficult.
Yeah,
as you're recognizing, like, the, you know, the micro dirty jobs don't really compare.
Yeah,
it's something that you invest so much, you have to invest so much in to do well without much coming back to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it still is a dirty job.
Yes, yes.
You also were talking about this. I'm wondering who was the person who invented the pen? Like, not the writing utensil, but like the fence. Who invented a fence? I don't know. And you know how today we're worried about technology replacing us. Do you think there were shepherds who were protesting and like tearing down fences? Because like, this was our job.
Probably.
That's what I think too.
Yeah. And then my next question, again, I've just kind of been raising these, I guess, to talk about real quickly. But I guess the big question that I have is to try and flip the way I've been thinking about this story a little bit. And rather than like zeroing in on the Good Shepherd, who I think understandably gets all of the attention in this passage, like, what does it look like to think a little bit about the sheep too? Like, how does having a faithful, present, committed Good Shepherd protect them, change the lives of the sheep? So that was the question I've been thinking about, like, a little bit, as sort of a one way to maybe see this passage in like a slightly new light that doesn't ignore the shepherd, but then that asks maybe more about the implications for the sheep and therefore for us.
Sheep get a pretty bad reputation, especially in this metaphor.
Totally.
It's like, man, we're sheep, and sheep are stupid. And I'm just wondering, like, sheep are just, I guess, prey by nature? I don't even know that. I'm assuming so, based on how they've had to be taken care of. It seems just kind of harsh to be like, look at all these stupid sheep that need a person to help take care of them. Like, yeah, they need someone to help take care of them. They've got just, like, little hooves, and they're just fluffy. Like, what are they going to do against a wolf? And that's, I think that's what I'm, like, my answer to what you were just raising is related to that. Like, if the shepherd's doing their job, the sheep don't know it. The sheep are just grazing, they're sleeping, they're living their lives. And I wonder how that awareness lends itself, like, do sheep know what they need to be grateful for? Do they know how much their lives are dependent on this strange creature that stands on its back legs and has a stick? Or do they just kind of tolerate it? I guess that's my question is, would the sheep's lives be different in this metaphor if they were aware of their need for protection? Their need for shepherding and what that may mean for us.
Would you have any thoughts about that? That's another great question. You're asking, you're bringing all the questions today.
You're welcome. I mean, do you think we have a strong awareness of what God's shepherding of us means? I mean, in my faith tradition, we talk about this as prevenient grace. Grace that goes before, that is the most unwarranted of all of God's unwarranted favor. It's grace that we can only understand, as we've talked about in the last few weeks, in retrospect. That we look back, having had our own experiences with God, and see moments where divine grace abounds. Or at least where we interpret past experiences through that lens and with that understanding. Here's another question. Or at least a point of curiosity. These are not to be answered necessarily.
This just episode is just all questions.
Hey, I love it. But I'm wondering if the goodness of Christ as shepherd is dependent on our lack of awareness. Like, prevenient grace is a demonstration of God's abundant love. It's love that goes beyond the boundaries that we're aware of, goes beyond the boundaries of our awareness. And is that part of what makes God a good shepherd? Is that even the things we might recognize and be grateful for are only the beginning of what's been done?
I like that. Something that's not just about, it's a view that's not just about like what we've sort of experienced from God, right? But that, like what you're saying, is what we've experienced is just you know, the smallest bit of what God has done for us. I like
to make a really harsh return to an earlier reference. Oh, It's just the tip of the iceberg.
I was thinking it, but I was trying not to go there. I was like, oh no. I was like, that might be too cringe. You did it.
You're welcome. I'm willing to go there. And I'm also thinking about those, especially in the world right now, and I'm thinking of especially in Gaza and in Palestine, who are in desperate need of someone to look out for them, who are in real need of a good shepherd. And I wonder how we could embody that too. That was also a turn, but something that's really on my mind.
Yeah. I think that's a good turn because, I mean, I'll just speak really personally for just a second. But, like, I feel pretty much completely powerless about that situation. Mm. Like, I don't really know what to do at all. I feel like no one in the government is listening to anybody at this point. Which is, like, the one outlet I think that sometimes you have with international conflicts. It's like, okay, you know, we can put pressure on our government to intervene or to act in some way, but it just seems like nobody's listening. They're all doing whatever they thought was the best at the beginning. They're still riding that out, which is frustrating to me. Maybe that's not entirely true. I'm sure there are people who have changed their positions, but none of those changes have seemed to do anything to halt or slow that conflict in any way. That was kind of unloaded there.
I resonate with your powerlessness or your feeling of powerlessness. And I think, just as we talked about, the lack of awareness, being sheep-like, I think we can also have a little bit of awareness of our sheep-likeness. And that might be, I don't want to say that to dismiss our ability to influence change, but the feeling is real, is that the people that we thought were there to represent the good, to protect people, to protect the most vulnerable, when it's this obvious how willing they are to put the most vulnerable on the line, it's just so jarring when the avenues we trusted are closed off so immediately. We need better shepherds. I think we need to be better shepherds too.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, with that, Jonathan, would you pray with me?
Yes, please, Seth.
Good shepherd of the sheep, a pack of wolves cannot scare you away. Watch over us, feed us, and bring us home when we've wandered away from you, Jesus Christ, our Savior and Lord, who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever.